who've just are wrapping up a 50th wedding anniversary trip. They're from Camden, Tennessee, and they've driven 6,000 miles just to be here with us tonight. We welcome you guys. We hope that all of you have a good week beginning today, and I know that we have a number of activities as a congregation which are just ahead. Remember the family camp and then the ladies' service activities, and there are also there may be a big wedding or something in between all of that, and we have other things to do as a congregation over the next month. Make sure that you pick up, if you haven't done so yet, this green copy on the table out front, the desk out front, which is the new daily Bible reading schedule for the fourth quarter of 2018. Fourth quarter already. And on Sunday evenings through this month, we decided to use as a basis for our study some of the passages that have been in our daily Bible reading. And we're considering some of the things God gives His people to help them. And I've chosen things that relate especially to God's help to His people in the land in which they live, and that will take in all of us. I appreciated Barry's mentioning those who are in charge of the situations in the world in our prayer a few moments ago, and that is something that we need to have in our prayers. I ran across one of the some comedian's one-liner who says, "So this guy loses his dog, so he puts an ad in the paper, and the ad says, 'Here, boy.'" I wonder how well that worked. That's not what God does when He sees that He's losing His people. When He knows that His people are straying from Him, and when He knows that they're in danger, what God does is to send a man with a message. And in our daily Bible reading this week, you could see a real man sent to bear witness to the people of Israel. Israel in the sense of the northern kingdom here. And Amos is the prophet. Amos is from a town a few miles to the south of Jerusalem in the southern kingdom. And somewhere around 740 or 790 to 740 BC, during that part of the 8th century BC, after the two golden calves have been set up in the northern kingdom and the two different times to worship them and the different priesthood and all of that stuff started by Jeroboam, God sends Amos to Bethel, where one of those golden calves is, with the message to his people. It's been a time in their lives where they haven't had many threats from outside enemies. They've had a long period of relative stability and a great deal of prosperity. And if you watch what goes on in their lives, whenever they have it easy and they have plenty and they're designing their own religion, it's not good. And in Isaiah chapter 5, you'll notice that in verse 12, God has Amos say to them, "For I know how many are your transgressions and how great are your sins." He names some of them. And then in verse 13, he says, "Therefore who is prudent will keep silent in such a time, for it is an evil time," he said to them. But God didn't allow Amos just to leave it that way. The reason he sent Amos is he wanted to do something to help his people mend their ways. He wanted to help them to be restored. He wanted to do something to call them back to him. He wanted to offer them both message and motive to make the the mending. I've chosen the word mending because in the New Testament, that's the word that's used for restored. It means to like mend a torn fish net, that sort of thing. And God does some things through Amos to help his people in that way. He sends a man, and through that man, God gives his people, it seems to me, one great overarching urge. And I use urge in the sense of him urging them, him really trying to move them along, that if they take this one thing to heart, will then have the effect of letting the flaws that they have and letting the problems that have developed in their national life to be healed or to be mended. And surely what God is interested in there is what all of us ought to be interested in when we look at ourselves as a people and at other people. We're not just interested in pointing out faults or calling names or placing blame. We know that people have their problems and weaknesses and flaws, and our hope and prayer would be for ourselves and everyone else that we would do better, that we'd have reason to come back closer to the Lord. And so in this book, I want to try to point out what seems to me to be the one main big invitation that God offers, the one urgent appeal that God makes. And you'll see it stated three times in Amos chapter 5, if you'll please look there with me. In Amos chapter 5, it starts with the warning of the extent of the judgment that will come unless the people hear the Lord. And in the end of verse 4 and verse 5, the Lord says to the house of Israel, "Seek me and live." No, there's the plea. Seek me. Seek me and live. And this involves not seeking some other god. Don't go to Bethel where Jeroboam has set up the golden calf in his own way of worship. Don't enter into Gilgal or cross over to Beersheba where some other supposed god is. These are places that are going to come to nothing. They're not going to give you life because they can't. There might be a word there to us about trying to find what we're looking for in some place that is a contradictory to God and to his nature. Seek me and live. What does it mean to seek God? It'll mean to humble ourselves before him, to recognize with awe who he is, and then to listen to what he says and to be obedient to it. Won't it mean at least that? He'll be the priority in our lives. Second time Amos says this is in verses 6 and 7 of chapter 5. He says, "Seek the Lord now and live, lest he break out like fire in the house of Joseph and it devour." This would be in the south of the land, and it come forward with none to quench it for Bethel. "Oh, you who turn justice to wormwood and cast down righteousness to the earth." What he's saying is, seek the Lord and live. And seek the Lord and respect his judgment. Seek the Lord and intend to please him. And make whatever adjustments are necessary in your life in order to do that. He's saying this to the people at Bethel. That's where Amos goes. And then skip down a little farther here and notice verse 14 and 15, Amos 5. This time he says, not seek me, not seek the Lord, but seek good and not evil, that you may live. Still the same desired outcome, to really live. And so the Lord, the God of hosts, will be with you as you have said. Hate evil and love good and establish justice in the gate. It may be that the Lord, the God of hosts, will be gracious to the remnant of Joseph. Now, observe in this statement that seeking the Lord involves loving what he loves and hating what he hates. And it involves the intention to have justice established, and it involves the recognition that we'll need His graciousness ourselves in that way. Now, can you see why I'm suggesting here that this is the one main appeal of this of the prophet? Seek the Lord and live. That's the urgent call and the invitation. Now, in a broader sense, in this book, what this means is that this one thing will have some implications in all the other corners of their lives. And I've chosen four main corners of their lives that are going to stand out here in this book. I'm trying not to preach the whole book for us. You take comfort in that. But I will say that the political and economic and religious and social conditions of their time made them especially susceptible to certain sins and problems. And they're the ones that Amos bravely addresses and deals with in this book. What he says is, if we as a people seek the Lord and seek good and not evil, and if we really will live, then it will involve for us a renewed sense of personal and public accountability to God. This is a big thing in the book of Amos. It's interesting how Amos addresses this idea. He starts out in the first two chapters, in the first part of chapter two at least, naming off all of the surrounding cities or city states or nations against whom Israel, the northern kingdom, might have had complaints and ill will. And he pronounces God's judgment on them, and you can watch him as he goes along, and you can just almost think the hearers at Bethel in Israel are going to be thinking, hooray for God's judgment, it's about time, we want justice. And you watch him in chapter 1, at verse 3, he starts out uttering his voice, and he says, I'm going to judge the transgressions of Damascus, Damascus being the city in Syria. And he names off all of their sins and what his judgment is going to mean to them. In chapter 1 and verse 6, then he names the transgressions of Gaza, one of the cities of the Philistines. And he names off all of their sins and what God's judgment will mean. And then the transgressions of Tyre off there to the northwest, or to the northwest corner of the land on the sea, Mediterranean Sea, and he names their transgressions and what their judgments will be. And then he names Edom off across the south of the Dead Sea, and he names their sins and what their judgments will be. And then he names the Ammonites also off to the east of where Israel would be, at east and south, and he pronounces judgment on them. Then he announces the sins of Moab and pronounces God's ways of judging their evil. And you can see, if you're Israel, all the defeats that you've been praying for of your enemies, one after another, are enumerated and predicted here. And you think, this is all great, man. He's preaching against everybody else. And then he mentions Judah. So the northern kingdom, you think about this. Here we are at Bethel in the northern kingdom, and this prophet from down in Judah, south of Jerusalem, comes up here and he preaches against Judah's sins and pronounces judgment on them. All good. Until you get to chapter 2 and verse 5. Thus says the Lord, for three transgressions of Israel, and for four, I will not revoke the punishment. Wait a minute. He's talking about us. If this would have been the response of the hearers. justice seemed fine as long as it applied to everybody else. It's almost humorous to watch the way this plays out. We get over into chapter 7, and there's a prophet up here who goes to the king of the northern kingdom and tells him, Amos is out here at Bethel preaching against our God and all of that. And against the altar there. And then he goes to Amos and he tells Amos, why don't you go back to Judah and preach down there. Don't ever come up here again to Bethel. Personal and public accountability to God is not the feel-good enjoyment that people look for in times of political ease and material prosperity. But that's what happens if someone seeks the Lord and His way, and if someone hates evil and loves good and pursues righteousness and justice. What God asked of the people would have been the thing that would have helped in the way they needed most, and that was with their own responsibility to Him and their own accountability to His judgment. You know, you and I have that same appointment to keep. While we look around us and we think of what will happen in the world and what will God do about this evil, this evil, this evil, we're still people who will appear before the judgment seat of Christ ourselves. That accountability is key to so much of the rest of what we need to do in our world. Secondly, by urging His people to seek the Lord and live, Amos has the potential impact on them of a retreat from the boredom of self-absorbed materialism. I happened to run across in some magazine, the story, a little bit of a satire story about our own time. It uses a hedge fund manager as the occasion for the story, and makes fun of his materialism a little, but it has a bit of an ouch to it. He says, the hedge fund manager gets out of his brand new Porsche, and as he's opened his door and he's getting out, a truck comes racing by and it gets too close and it clips his door and takes off the door of his gleaming Porsche. Is it Porsche or Porsche? I don't have one. I'm not sure about that. Anyway, the guy says, my Porsche, my beautiful silver Porsche is ruined, and he's just screaming in the road. And the police officer arrives at the scene and sees what's happening, and he shakes his head in disgust. I can't believe you. You're so focused on your possessions, you don't even realize your left arm was torn off when that truck hit you. And the hedge fund manager looks down in absolute horror and he says, oh no, my Rolex. You've seen the story. It's not quite that bad in Amos' day, but close. These people, if you read this whole book, they have the summer house, the winter house, the great house, the house of ivory, bowls of wine, couches to lay around on, husbands to holler at and bring them something to drink, all kinds of parties. Don't you guys quit punching your wives. All of the parties and instruments and so forth to entertain them, lambs from the flock, calves from the midst of the stall, oils to anoint themselves with, to pamper themselves, but they're not grieved at the sins of their people. That's from chapter 6. They're not grieved at the sins of their people. They are stretched out in revelry, and their lives are passing by, and people are being ruined. What would change that? A political program? Some great movement or some great leader? No, what would change it would be to seek the Lord, to believe that life really is to be found in Him, to love what's good, to hate what's evil. That's what Amos is telling his people. If they would put God where He belonged in their lives, it would have the impact of bringing them back from the boredom of their self-absorbed material. I can almost hear them say it when I look at the pictures of their material things. We're bored. We're bored. You ever heard that? A third benefit of seeking the Lord like this, a third implication of it would be that it would involve a return from shallow religion to a sensitivity to God's will and to God's ways. And again, without covering every verse about this in this powerful little book, I just mentioned to you some of the situations I see in it, and you will if you read it. They have their altars and their gods set up at these two different places, but they're laying around wanting to know, when will the Sabbath be over so we can buy and sell? When someone reproves them in the gate and tells them what God says, they refuse to listen and they try to run Him off. They have no interest in that. They are dedicated about their feasts and their solemn assemblies and their burnt offerings and their peace offerings of fattened animals and the noise of their songs. They have all of those things according to chapter 5. But there is an emptiness about it, a lack of any real meaning in it, that causes God to say, I hate it. I despise it. I take no delight in it. Your religion is simply a personal convenience to you. That's all it is. It has no impact on your priorities in life and on how you treat other people. And you need to change that by seeking Me. That's a big part of the message of this book. And you who have read it will be impressed at the vivid ways in which Amos makes that point. A fourth thing, and the last one that I want to mention in our study tonight, is that by seeking God, by believing that living is to be found in Him, by seeking good and not evil, a realistic combination of justice and righteousness in the course of daily life will be developed. We're having a problem with this in our culture. There are many calls, for example, for social justice. And Amos would have said that such calls are very, very urgently needed. But the problem is he might not have meant by it what is meant in political discussions right now. There is an unfairness and an inequity to using people and not caring about the conditions in which people have to live their lives that is shameful. There is also an insistence on doing what we want and thinking there will never be any consequences and that someone will support us while we do what we want, which is also shameful. And Amos is one book which strikes a very, very important balance. If you look at his message in Amos chapter 2, let me just read a few of these passages for us. These are the vivid ones. In chapter 2 and verse 6, he's naming the transgressions of Israel. Because they sell the righteous for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals. Those who trample the head of the poor into the dust of the earth and turn aside the way of the afflicted. You notice all of that. That fits in some political discussions. On the other hand, a man and his father go into the same girl so that my holy name is profaned. They lay themselves down beside every altar on garments taken in pledge. It's an ugly picture. They're taking garments that were the penalty for unpaid debts, laying them down on the altar, and then laying themselves down, a father and a boy, with his boy with the same girl, and they are committing sexual immorality with no shame. This is the part of the equation that nobody is going to talk about. And it will take seeking God and believing that we can live in Him and in His ways to put both of those, both the justice and the righteousness mentioned here together. Look at some of the other statements of this in this book. The in chapter 4 in verse 1 beginning, the cows of Bashan. I probably would never talk to any of the people who hear me this way, but Amos did. Cows of Bashan was up in Israel, who are on the mountain of Samaria, who oppress the poor and crush the needy, and say to your husbands, bring that we may drink. It's not a very, very encouraging picture, is it, at to say the least. And then you look on over into chapter 5, the most famous of these statements from Amos. After he's mentioned their empty religion, he says in verse 24, "But let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty flowing stream," or an ever-flowing stream. Verse 11 of chapter 5 had said, "Therefore, because you trample on the poor and you exact taxes of grain from him and you've built houses of hewn stone, but you shall not dwell in them," and so forth, as a penalty for what they've done. In verse 12, you afflict the righteous who take a bribe, who turn aside the needy in the gate. And then in chapter 6, verse 4 and following, there are the beds of ivory and all of that kind of stuff that he mentions here. The combination of justice and righteousness is more than just parallel words. At least it looks that way to me. And I think most of the time, these are heard as parallel words. Justice and righteousness. Therefore, it becomes easy to talk about social programs, but not moral righteousness. Or moral righteousness, but not social programs. Government can't address both things. It takes the voice of the church in the world today to do its work, and what a challenge we have in front of us that way. Amos issues great warnings. I read about a state trooper telling about a day when he happened to pull over a young man who was for speeding, and he got the young man in his squad, cruiser, and he sat down with him, and he was writing the young man a ticket. Young man is just as nervous as he can be, but he tries to resolve a situation by making small talk to the trooper. So he says to the trooper, Sure is a beautiful day. The trooper just keeps riding, and without hesitation, he says, "Yes, it is. I wish I was fishing." And the young man, without any response time at all, said, "No offense, sir, but I wish you were too." And the trooper said, I laughed so much, I decided just to give him a warning that day and let him go. Amos gives warnings, but they're not like that one. Amos gives warnings and said, if we don't do something, it's going to be like a ewe, a sheep that falls into the predator's hands or mouths, and there's nothing left but a couple of ears and a part of a leg. And Amos doesn't want that to happen, and neither does God. So here is God giving his people what's necessary so that their flaws may be healed. And it's what's necessary is this urging hint of them to seek him and live. That one thing can have an effect on a people that nothing else can. I hope you'll think about it and pray it over. And if you're here tonight and you can see that God has done way more than that in giving his son for us, a son who said, "Come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest." If you put that together with what we tried to talk about this morning, and you know that you need, in order to come in contact with the saving blood of the Lamb, to be baptized into his name. Or if you're here tonight and you need your brothers and sisters to pray with you about something, we'll offer you the, like Amos is doing, the opportunity, the invitation to let us know that by coming here while we stand and sing this song.